It's time to welcome in our friend Chad Finn of the Boston Globe and Boston.com. Happy Monday there, Mr. Finn.
I guess so. I don't like Mondays.
No?
Starfield.
Sorry to hear that. I'm very sorry.
I was supposed to have the day off and end up working.
Oh, well, I
better today.
Thought it was because you talked to us on Mondays. I was beginning to take it personally.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That makes Mondays wonderful. Otherwise.
All right, listen, I don't want to compare the two. That would be unfair to do, but I know this. Bailey Zappe did not need some phantom pass interference call to get a win yesterday, like some other quarterbacks.
It's pretty impressive. I did. I picked them to win. I wish I had, like we all do in retrospect, wish I had recognized that Belichick was going to eat Jared Goff alive again. But really, primary reason that they won was Zappe played so well within what they asked him to do. I mean, extremely efficient, showed much better poise in the pocket than he did when he got thrown into the fire against the Packers. And I think the one takeaway you can really have for sure, whether or not there ever ends up being a quarterback controversy down the road, and it really shouldn't be the discussion right now, but at least he's a capable backup, and Brian Hoyer should probably start leaning toward the coaching side of things a little bit more than being a the next guy in if something happens to the starter. I was pretty impressed.
Yeah, the poise was terrific to see out there. Now, it helps when you've got Ramondre Stevenson rushing for 161 yards. It takes a little pressure off your rookie quarterback.
It sure does, yeah. And we've kind of been waiting for that. You know, they do the job share thing at running back with, it's common sense to do it because these guys take a beating. Damian Harris is a really good back in his own right. He's the one who tends to get the touchdowns and do the short yardage stuff. But Stevenson's just so dynamic, and we really began seeing that midway through last season. If you remember, beginning of the year, I think he fumbled in the opener, and we didn't see him for a couple of weeks. He got in the doghouse pretty quick. But right around midseason last year, he really blossomed, and we were kind of waiting for that moment where we would see what it would look like when you get a workhorse back's workload. And career-high 25 carries yesterday, and what was the result? 161 yards, and he was just as good at the end of the game, busting off a 26-yarder, 11-yarder to essentially end the game. It really makes you think they have something special here.
Defensively, look, the Lions came in as the number one offense in the NFL. Is the Patriot defense that good, or is it just that Belichickian ability to get inside the head of certain quarterbacks?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. I don't know if you watch Hard Knocks, but the Dan Campbell is a really likable guy.
Mm.
But you could tell on Hard Knocks that his assistants, most of whom are ex-NFL players, and more accomplished NFL players than he was, take advantage of him, especially Deuce Staley, the running backs coach, who was like in inter-squad scrimmages, he'd be screaming at the defensive coordinator like a kind of inept high school coach would talk trash, and really unprofessional. And it made me think that the Lions are probably going to end up being a really undisciplined team, and that's what we saw yesterday. They couldn't adjust offensively when the Patriots started thwarting anything they tried to do. Goff looked rattled from the get-go. Once they failed on those first couple of fourth down attempts, it just looked like a team that didn't believe in itself at all. And defensively, they were a disaster. I mean, I mentioned Hard Knocks. That show tends to focus on guys who are on the fringe of making the team. That's the drama. About 10 of those guys that were on the fringe of the making the team ended up playing on defense for him yesterday. So they were pretty beat up on that side of the ball. But clearly the number one thing in this game was just the head coaching mismatch.
And I look at the schedule over the next 4 weeks. I can easily see 3 wins in those next 4 games, if not running the table. Is it unreasonable to think, with a lot of mediocrity in the NFL, that the Patriots could maybe weasel their way into a being a playoff contender?
Yeah, I think they at least have a real chance here to get to that 5-4 range or 5-5 and sort of position themselves to make a pretty good run. If when Matt comes back, and you can afford to wait until he's completely healthy. He's a better quarterback. He's got much greater knowledge of what they're trying to do. They just need to give him give him a little bit more of what they're giving Zappe in terms of play action. Mac, I think he ran 6 play action plays all year. That was really beneficial for the Patriots yesterday, especially when Stevenson started running like that, where they really had to account for it. But they certainly appear to have the defense to keep them in games. On the soft part of the schedule here, they could pick up a couple of W's, even if their starting quarterback isn't back yet.
Now, of course, when I grew up, I'm pretty old, as you know, and when I grew up, the Giants in this area were, to a lot of people, their favorite team. The AFL was not quite at the same level as the NFL, and so there are some Giant holdovers here, and my goodness, they're in seventh heaven today. I'm not sure if it's real or not, but 4-1 either way, the Giants are back, baby.
I didn't realize you went back that far. My dad's buddies are all Giants fans. They don't even recognize that the AFC, the AFL exists, let alone the AFC. So, they kind of like Gino Cappelletti, but that's about
right.
It.
Right.
I feel like any remaining Giants fans got run out of New England in 07, and then not in 07, then 2011. So, but it is cool to see, and I think it's good to see Saquon Barkley back. He's just such an electric running back when he was at Penn State, and then his first year in the league before he got hurt. And Daboll might end up being the best guy off the quote-unquote Belichick coaching tree. Mm. And I don't know if he counts totally. I mean, he went Saban of Alabama and then to the Bills and helped make Josh Allen into what he is. So he's gone his own path here to the head coaching job, but definitely has those ties back to the Patriots that might make Bill look pretty good down the road.
We're talking with Chad Finn here on Downtown. Well, it's a bittersweet last few Red Sox games, but what a great exit from the stage by a true class act that will be so missed in Dennis Eckersley.
Yeah, he is everything. He seems to be on the air, except he swears a little bit more, a lot more, actually. But it's just so interesting because he got here in 78, same year as Remy when he came over in the trade, and that's roughly around time a lot of people my generation started following the team right around then. And it feels like he's been here, even though he was off to Oakland, had his great success there, the Cubs and the Cardinals. He associates himself with Boston more than any other city, and I think the 20 years in the broadcast booth help Red Sox fans do that, on top of when he did as a starting pitcher here and then when he came back for one last hurrah in 98. What people got to see, I think, on that broadcast was how much people genuinely care about him and how much Eck reciprocates that. You saw it with Tom Caron, Dave O'Brien at the end of that broadcast, Jim Rice, all these people who were either in tears or close to in tears because Eck is heading off to California. He's actually, I think he left Saturday. And we're going to really miss the guy. I haven't really thought that much about how much it affects the broadcast because I've just kind of been thinking about how much I'm going to miss being able to talk to him as the media writer.
Yeah, he was wonderful. And I would say, too, it reminded me again, because he will always, for as long as he's in Boston, be in the shadow of Don Orsillo, which is a shame because I think Dave O'Brien is a terrific broadcaster in his own right. But I have so much respect for what he's had to do these last few years in juggling so many different analysts along the way, and understanding, too, that a lot of the time when you had the three-man booth with Eck and Remy, realizing that he needed to just get out of the way, and he did that all with such grace and professionalism.
He did, and he still got shrapnel from Orsillo leaving, and the way the really brutal way the Red Sox handled that. I heard from people the other day after writing about Eck's last game said, did Eck ever acknowledge O'Brien, as if they were kind of hoping they didn't? And they had a great moment at the end of the broadcast where, Eck thanked him for how great he was at helping him thrive in that role and their friendship and all of that. And it was a very real moment. And it was like people didn't want to see it or something. And, I get down there. It was a 4 o'clock game. I get down there about noon that day just to set it up with Eck to talk beforehand. And when I talked to him around 12:30 after he got to the ballpark, one of the first things he said was he just wanted to thank Tom Karen and Dave in particular, because they made the job so easy for him and they were so fun for him to work with. So OB got his credit from Eck, even if, though he doesn't always get it from the fan base because of things that are out of his control.
Well, your piece on Eck's last days was terrific as well, if anybody hasn't seen it yet. Now the offseason begins. Obviously, priority one is to get some of those guys back. Are you hearing anything about Bogaerts or efforts to work out a deal with Devers?
Your friend of mine, Sean McAdam, reported that he's talked to ownership a couple of times. You know, maybe they made Heim wait in the hallway on those. Something, I don't know, but I take that as a good sign. I understand why there's reluctance to sign him. He's, from a completely analytical standpoint, 30 years old now. Middle infielders tend not to age that well after age 30. He's seen a decline in power and slugging, and those things are probably real. But you also have to consider the factor that he can thrive here. He still had a really good year. He improved defensively because he puts the work in and he studies metrics to see how they read things and how those things affect what his numbers look like. He's a beloved guy in the clubhouse and he hangs out with everybody, talks to the hillbilly relief pitchers and, you know, the Dominican infielders and whoever. He used to see him sitting with Benintendi all the time, just BSing with him before a game. And guys like that stuff's important. And I don't know if Bloom values it enough. I think he might be learning to, because he's never been in a market like this one. But he needs to learn it with Bogaerts, because that guy is essential to the Red Sox culture, all the good things about it.
All right, I think it's an interesting question for you, because I was talking about it with some people the other day. I don't know if you're a big sports memorabilia guy. I know about your love of baseball cards, but what's your most prized piece of athletic memorabilia?
It's the press box sign from the ballpark in Old Orchard.
Oh, nice, nice.
I'm going to tell you how I got that, but yeah, back when it was you know, dilapidated before they cleaned it up and everything was falling apart, and they seemed to have a fire every other week there. Figured out a way to secure that. So that's in my office. That'd be pretty high up there.
I like that. Now, is it autographed by Jordan Kobritz?
No, it's not. maybe Gary Thorne or somebody like that I should get, right?
So, yeah.
Corey Snyder. Dave Gallagher's great on Twitter. Maybe I'll get him. He spent 3 years.
There you go. I like
that. Buckley probably like that.
I like that, though, because that's unique. That's something nobody else can possibly have. That's good stuff.
Yeah, that's probably it. My office is filled with that kind of stuff. A lot of the stuff I treasure now is, like, from coaching kids and things like that. And, right. You know, the ball they give you at the end of the year that they all sign when they can't even barely write their name. Like, that was high school for these girls.
I found one of those the other day from, I think, coaching Farm League back in, I was back in the 70s, I think, and I found that ball in a box that I'd had all these years. It was great. It brought back so many memories.
Was that when girls were only, you had six on the court and three could play offense and play defense? Wasn't that long ago?
It was pretty close to that long ago, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's what my mom always used to tell me about her high-scoring playing days. Didn't let them pass half court.
Well, you know, they're women. You have to let them go slowly.
Yeah, they'd be shocked by Cindy Blodgett, wouldn't they?
I think so, and much of the way the world is today. That's what we were chatting the other day about. I think it was the anniversary of the Bobby Riggs, Billie Jean King Battle of the Sexes, and can't imagine. So it would be like a McEnroe today offering to get throttled by Serena Williams.
Yeah, I'd like to see that, actually. But, yeah, you know when I really learned how good women's basketball players were was when I got to UMaine, and they used to play pickup over at the gym, and, getting destroyed by Rachel Bouchard for a couple of games in a row will humble you.
I loved Rachel. Yeah, she could do it. I played a couple of pickup games with her myself, and give her the ball, get out of the way.
Yep, just enjoy the show.
Absolutely. Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Chad, great talking with you. As always, I hope the rest of your Monday goes well, even though it was a work day, and we'll talk with you soon.
Nah, I got to talk to Javier and those guys.
Oh,
downhill.
Sorry about that. Well, make the most of it, and we'll catch you before too long.
All right, Rich. Take care.